You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together. Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm joined today by Jeremy Hartman. We're going to kind of... He missed the coach's corner on Sunday, so we're going to kind of let him say his piece for that. And then we're going to get more into who you are as an athlete, Jeremy, or who you are slash who you were. Like, we're going to go through the whole shebang with that. So first things first, introduce yourself a little bit, give a little background on yourself, and then we'll get into what we talked about on Sunday.
Yeah, my name's Jeremy Hartman, and I'm a powerlifting and high school strength conditioning coach out in the Indianapolis, Indiana area. So been out here for going on a seventh year, started a program from the ground up with our athletics with strength conditioning and also with my powerlifting team in order to try to help change the school culture. And I wanted to have obviously my own kids compete and represent me and give some kids a chance in a sport that they weren't familiar with in the area and see how far we can take it.
All right. How many lifters do you have?
On my end right now, I have my three main lifters, Chloe Dublin, Shelby Miles, and Jenica Baldridge, who have been with me since they first ever stepped into a weight room. Those are my main three ones. And then I've got about 25 other developmental ones that have just started within the last couple years since I put a little more focus on opening it up to other people coming in and joining.
So around 30, that's actually a pretty big, it's a pretty big group.
Yeah. Like I said, a lot of people, I got some military people coming up, some bench only people, kind of a wide variety coming in here. I got some really good youth lifters coming up that should be able to make some world teams as well.
Oh, nice. All right. So on Sunday, we were kind of talking about how, so me, Zach, Ryan, how we use variations within our training, you know, how we kind of analyze a lifter for their weaknesses and kind of our exercises that we choose to kind of fix some of those weaknesses and stuff. So maybe you can kind of just give like a quick little like overview of how you analyze a lifter and pick which variations to use and whatnot. We kind of focus more on the squat than the other two, but feel free with whichever lift.
Yeah, with any of the lifts, you know, the first thing is I got to watch people do it, whether I'm training people online or I'm training people in person. First thing we do is a technical analysis before I even talk about programs and what to put them on. I just want to see where they're at with stuff. I keep the reps low so I can see at least some moderate weight or some maximal weight on there. From there, I adjust their technique. I see how their body kind of adapts. And you always got to give it time. If somebody's been squatting a certain way or doing something for a certain way for a long period of time, I try to justify the reasons why we're going into this. And we always have that adjustment period of where I'm trying to get them where they're at. And a lot of the times I meet the lifters right in the middle. Giving example, I have some people I'm working with on deadlift right now, and I pulled the slight round back. I have my lifters pull with straight backs, but with people come in, they've kind of developed certain technique wise, not so much fallacies in their lifts, but just kind of their motor patterns that they've just developed over time. It's hard to change them right away and put them in the correct positions. So I always look for kind of that middle area of the way I'm trying to teach you, the way they're at, and you seem to have a really good strength gain from there. But looking at their technical stuff, it's really easy to see. I think squat's the biggest one for me where I can see a lot of weaknesses. You know, if they can't keep tight on a squat on their back with the bar, it usually affects their bench and their deadlift. You know, sometimes vice versa. I'm able to see their flexibility in their lifts, see where their knees, if they're tracking over their toes too much, if their toes turn out. Just little things like that when I'm assessing them and just watching people squat, honestly, be able to pinpoint certain stuff over time. I can see if they're quad dominant and their quads are taking over. I can see their bar position, if their hands are too wide or if sometimes they're even in too close. You know, I talked to them about their lifts, some of the stuff they've had, if they've had injuries in the past, what kind of their training has been previous. And I just really look at all three big lifts. And once they're in front of me, I'm able, you know, at least look at it on video. Then I start prescribing, obviously, the technical change in those lifts, and then I start picking out certain assistance exercises that, you know, tend not to bother them or, you know, have any problems that, you know, if they've suffered some injury stuff in the past, you know, or they've had little things from other sports come up. But I look at their squat, I look at their bench, their deadlift, try to fix their technique. Then I start slowly adding in assistance work that I think are going to benefit those. And I just do a simple priority list. I look at number one priority. We do a closely related lift. So if I have a lot of people who can't keep their chest up in a squat, after we've kind of worked on their squat by using a box squat, using pause squats, I'll use a lot of pin squats. You know, if you come down on a set of pins and you lift your butt up first, you're going to know that you're not using your chest. And that's a simple exercise with priority number one that would help them raise their chest in a squat. If they have trouble staying tight in the bottom, that means their knees are shifting, stay balanced on their feet, keep their back position. I'll hold them, hold between 1 and 3 seconds after their normal squat routine. And from there, I just identify weaknesses. So I look for, you know, in a squat, it's hips, hamstrings, back and ab work. You know, I kind of put a priority list together after they've hit a squat. Maybe they've hit a pause squat or a pin squat to help with their technique and general weakness. And then I break it down into kind of fundamental bodybuilding movements and kind of work their weaknesses from there.
Awesome. That's actually, you kind of touched on a lot of the same things that everyone else touched on Sunday. So it'll be a nice little like reinforcement of a lot of that stuff. So Jeremy, I kind of want to get into you as an athlete a little bit more. Yeah. So let's start with how you got into the sport of powerlifting.
Yeah. You know, I really think I was one of the most privileged kids in America. And by that, I had a coach in sixth grade convince me to go out for wrestling, and somebody had helped his kid, and kind of his way of paying back, he was training his other younger son. And he started strength training us with us right away. You know, this guy, Mr. Gary Conjun was his name. I still owe him much more than I can ever talk about on a podcast or tell him to real life. But he had me started strength training back in sixth grade. A lot of people thought it was taboo. You shouldn't be doing that. Old wives' tales about growth plates and hurting this and breaking this and causing damage here. It's probably the biggest mark, which helped me stay pretty much, for the most part, injury-free during my time. But I was pushing and pulling sleds back when he was making them in his metal fabricating shop in Cleveland, Ohio. He had me climbing ropes. I was doing push-ups and off chairs, upside down sit-ups with moon boots, kind of like a lot of just basic athletic stuff that he was throwing at me that, you know, we're just increased resistance on. We climbed the rope all the time, and it set up such a foundational base, not only for my wrestling with the strength and everything, but actually when I started hitting the actual weight room as a freshman, I had that base that no other kids had really developed. And that's one thing I instill in my athletes. But those 3 years, I mean, I was doing bleacher runs up and down with weights in my hands. We were doing farmer's walks, farmer's runs, uphill work. You know, the guy was throwing so much simple strength conditioning stuff at us and making it always competitive. That just really catapulted just my general physical preparation when I actually started entering the weight room in 9th and 10th grade year, where, you know, other people were making slow gains or they were hitting plateaus, which you really shouldn't be doing as a high school athlete. I kept going on and on because I had this great base built where I had been doing for 3 years push-ups with weight on my back, you know, push-ups with my hands on chairs and going 4 or 5 inches below. I was doing one-legged squats with weights. You name it, this guy was training me with it. And for 3 years, that's the only thing I knew. You know, when I got into high school, everyone was asking me how much I benched or how much I squatted or deadlifted or military pressed, and I didn't have an answer. I said, well, I can tell you how much weight I can carry on my back and run up a hill. I can tell you how much I can push and pull my sled up a hill. And I said, I can tell you how many times I can go up and down that rope with a weight vest on. And it was just kind of funny, my answers compared to what a lot of the high school kids were coming into. And from there, that was kind of the missing link in my wrestling as I developed. You know, Mr. Conjun brought me up so far and kept really emphasizing that. And I fell in love with the weight room because he was showing me a lot of Olympic athletes, a lot of collegiate NCAA champions. He was showing me what the best were doing. And the big thing he was showing me on those was how those guys were put together. You know, if you look at wrestlers, I mean, top level wrestlers are athletes all around. They're strong, fast, flexible. They were kind of the total package. So when I was looking at these guys and looking at the NCAA champs and world champions and, you know, Olympic champions, they were all, you know, in shape, they're all conditioned, they were all brutal athletes out there. It's a brutal sport. And I just fell in love with that, looking at those guys and seeing that and how they trained with strength conditioning, that as I went through my wrestling career, I had some, obviously some setbacks, you know, Mr. Conjan kind of brought me up to another guy named Vic Voinovich, who was a state champion Division I wrestler for a little bit. And he started showing me the power lifts. You know, I got to learn a sumo deadlift when I was in 10th grade. I learned how to tuck my shoulders under my bench press, you know, where a lot of guys were getting injured. You know, learned how to actually squat below parallel, which a lot of people didn't do. So I started learning the basics of that in high school. And from there, it just kept on more and more. My wrestling started taking off. You know, I was making national teams in the summer for freestyle. You know, I went to state in wrestling, but I fell in love with lifting so much and how it changed my speed, how it changed my athleticism, and most importantly, with my athletics, how it changed my confidence. And a lot of that was built around bench and deadlifting. You know, I was one of the top wrestlers in the state. I've even had a couple Division I coaches at Cleveland State University and other places just tell me how my strength was. And it was due to the training that I was given from 6th, 7th, and 8th grade under Mr. Gary Conjan. And then what Vic was able to do in the weight room after that, it just kind of carried on. And I fell in love with it so much. I had some scholarship offers for wrestling, some small Division I schools, mostly Division II and III. And I just looked at it, and I knew I was done. And I fell in such in love with lifting that I wanted to take that to the next level. And the guy that actually, Vic Voinovich, who had gotten me started more on the power lifts, he really suggested that I go into powerlifting, and I was obviously unfamiliar with that, but I've been doing squat, bench, deadlift, conventional, sumo style. I knew how to tuck my shoulders. You know, I knew how to squat below parallel with a low bar. We started looking into that because he knew I needed something to be competitive. He just happened to open a weight room. He used to train with Louis Simmons. He used to train Kevin Randleman and Dan Bobish, and I had no idea at that time who Louis Simmons was or West Side Barbell or any of that stuff. And he started training a little bit more like that. Met a couple of powerlifters in my area, which I didn't even know about. Got in with Greg Page, who was a national champion at 148 pounds. Back then, in 2001, he deadlifted 630 at 148-pound body weight. And I looked at that stuff, and I was like, man, I got to get in with this. There's a couple other lifters. Trend 60, Spinelli, Larry Miller. They were all pretty good lifters, winning national titles, competing at the world level scene. So I started learning back then how the equipment worked, how the actual powerlifting work. So I really started learning about all this, reading about all this. Had a friend who had trained with Louis Simmons before. Actually got to go down to his gym, not really knowing much about him when I was 18 years old. And end up talking to him about it, learning a lot from those lifters. Went back a few more times because being from Cleveland, Ohio, and being around that, all you saw in powerlifting USA was West Side Barbell stuff. And I didn't know the difference between USAPL, IPF, you know, IPA, whatever, WPO, all the different organizations they had. And from there, honestly, I just started reading stuff, started getting around more lifters, started finding more coaches, started competing on the national scene, you know, ended up making a world team in 2003. And all of a sudden, here I am going to Kosciuszko, Poland to compete for the U.S., you know, for the junior lifters age 19 to 23. And I met some more good people over there. I met some more good lifters, started learning about different philosophies, started learning about how people trained. I started getting involved with strength conditioning because I knew I wanted to be some type of strength conditioning coach. So I started reading up and talking to some Division I strength coaches. So I was learning about, you know, linear periodization. I was learning about how to train athletes, how to peak athletes. It's almost the same thing with powerlifting. So it was like a whole new world started opening up. Some other lifters along the way, you know, I met Wade Hooper, who really helped me with my squat a little bit. Brian Siders, who was before we had Blaine Sumner and Ray Williams, you know, he was the top heavyweight around. Brad Gillingham back in his day, Brad Gillingham's has the most over 800 pound deadlifts in the history of all powerlifting. Brad Gillingham was real influential when I was growing up coming through the lifts. Another guy who, when I was in college, I met, I didn't even know this. He was right in the Cleveland area. His name was Vincenello. You know, if you don't know who Vincenello is, you need to look him up. He was known as Mr. Deadlift at the time. He was the first man ever to deadlift over 800 pounds, weighing under 200 pounds. And there were no special deadlift bars. There was no super suits. You know, it was pretty crazy what that man was able to do. And I believe his best deadlift ever in the gym was 890 deadlift when he was weighing 220 pounds. He was a five-time IPF world champion. And we're talking back in the day when there was only one league. You know, that was the IPF. There wasn't all these other crazy world titles and different organizations. There was only one. So as a sophomore in college, 21 years old, I spent a lot of time with Vince. Vince talked to me and really opened up my eyes to what it meant to deadlift. So what I mean by that is it wasn't just enough to train. And he told me about some of his facts and his fallacies. He thought he deadlifted too much. He said he thought it hurt him later on in his powerlifting career, deadlifting all the time year round. So Vince really opened up my eyes into building assistance exercises. And what I mean by assistance work, one thing that really stuck out, I was happy. I was 19, 20 years old. You know, I was able to do the full stack of 200 plus pounds for reps on my lat pull downs. And Vince kind of laughed jokingly and told me, he goes, "That's good." He goes, "Where's your deadlift at?" And I just pulled my first 600 at 198, and I was pretty happy with that. And he goes, "That's pretty good." And he goes, "When I was deadlifting over 800, he goes, "I used to use between 350 and 380 pounds on my lat pull downs." And that was kind of an eye opener. So, you know, we really learned about how important lat strength was, how back strength. We taught me a lot about good morning exercises, how to actually build your lower back. You know, a lot of people are, including athletes, especially my lifters, they're afraid to spend a lot of time and build it. You'll see them do back extensions with a 45-pound plate or, you know, a little bit of weight. Vince was the opposite. You know, Vince was over there doing back extensions with over 225 pounds on his back. You know, that was kind of really unheard of at the time. You know, another thing he talked to me, we talked about heavy walkouts. He would do heavy walkouts and pin squats, but he'd only do like 4 to 5 inches down. So we were talking about that, how you should overload your squat. And at that time, you know, my squat was around 672 and basic single ply gear. And Vince said, "That's pretty good." And he goes, so I walked out over 700 and I was doing some pin squat 4 or 5 inches down. And what an eye opener was, Vincenella, when he pulled his 890 deadlift, he was doing over 1200 pounds. So I got a guy walking out 1200 pounds in a little marathon suit with, you know, basic knee wrap, hitting pin squats back and forth, really talking to me about the importance of back strength. So I'm learning all this stuff and I'm learning Vince's philosophy. And a great thing else I learned was the importance of mental training. We as coaches, we always hear that. And you know, we other lifters, be mentally tough. You got to learn mental toughness. This is all mental. Well, besides training the physical, what Vince showed me was something he wished he would got into early, was how to train mental. So Vince spent a lot of time talking about the mental side of lifting, how to approach the weights. We even did some mental training, honestly, where he'd sit down and it's kind of funny, but he'd put me in trances and stuff. And I would sit there and go through lifts before my meets, practice about getting the bar position ready, how it's going to feel at a meet. And Vince and I would sit down over the phone, or I'd stop in his gym when I was ever in town from college. We would sit there and go through all this mental training. You know, he sat there and he wrote me out routines that he used to use back in his day. We modified them. Vince talked to me about training the opposite way on your deadlift. So I was at the time pulling sumo. He goes, "Well, how much conventionally can you do?" I said, "Well, I can only do, you know, I was pulling over 600. I said, "You know, there I'm barely over 500, you know, sumo." And he goes, "Well, that's showing you that you have a weakness." I said, "Well, what do you mean? I'm really good in this position." He goes, "Well, that shows that you're, you know," at the time, he goes, "you need to develop certain muscle groups with the other lifts." He goes, "They should be kind of almost near each other." And I said, "Really?" I said, "But I've talked to other lifters that, you know, this is better than this." And he goes, "That's fine." But he goes, "If you're talking about over time and really developing your deadlift," he goes, "you got to be good in both stances." He asked me, he goes, "What type of grips do you use in bench press?" I said, "Oh, I use close grip, you know, pinky on the rings, wide grip, you know, some different stuff to work different areas." And he goes, "Well, why aren't you doing the same on your deadlift?" And that was kind of an eye opener. I didn't know why. He goes, "You've got to strengthen up." He goes, "Deadlift is total body." He goes, "You've got to strengthen it up in certain areas." You know, I learned about ab training when I was down at Louis Simmons gym. I just, you know, put tens and fives behind my head, did ab training afterwards. Your abdominals are like any other muscle group. You know, you've got to train them. You've got to put them on some type of periodization, and you've got to add weight. You want your bench to go up, you've got to add weight to it. You know, you want your abs to help strengthen it up and give your lower back a little bit of a break from the pounding you put on deadlifting and powerlifting. You just got to strengthen your abdominals up. So as I was going through this, you know, I worked with Vince a lot. I went down to Louis' gym several times before he would even talk to me. And I took all my fall breaks that I had for college, and I would spend them down at my friends down in Ohio State. I would just save up my gas money, save up my Christmas money ahead of time. I would just go down there and stay with them during some of the Christmas break, some of the fall break. And I worked out with that stuff. Louis was the one that actually changed me over from sumo at the time to conventional. And since Vince had told me that, I actually ended up pulling a 50-pound PR in his gym because my back was strong. My hips and hamstrings weren't developed. So I started switching over to my conventional lifts and started really working on some of my assistance work to bring up those weak areas. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm going from my low 600s, I'm pulling 660, 670. And my back was taking a lot of pounding because at the time I was pulling with a slight round back. It's just something that Vince and I had worked on. It wasn't where my back was out of position or was hurting. It was just the way Vince had taught me and the way I kind of developed on my own was to tighten up the lower back, but just tighten the upper back enough to where I felt my lats locked in. And for me personally, it was with a slight round if you looked at me deadlifting. But I was still pulling great, still didn't have any problems with it. Well, again, another lacking area was my abdominal work. And luckily, when I was down there with Louie, he pointed that out to me. So I was training 4 to 5 days at a time, using primarily a speed max effort format, the conjugate system. And from there, I started coming into extra on my other 2 days to work in and do heavy abdominal training. Abs were something I did, you know, maybe at the end of a workout, a few sets. I never really treated them like any other muscle group. And all of a sudden, after it was probably a good 6 months, I mean, I really brought my abs up to where I can not even put a 210s or a 25 behind my head, you know, where we're up over 135 pounds that I was able to hold and do sit-ups with pauses, decline work, various angles I would do. I'd help strengthen up my hips. I would do a lot of wide stance sit-ups where I'd lay on the ground, hook my feet under the power rack. So I was in a wide stance, and I would do sit-ups off the ground, putting a dumbbell or barbell behind my head, and that would really tax my hips, obviously working my abs too. And it took about a good 6 months, but I went from a 670, right around a 670 deadlift when I pulled the 18, 19-year-old American record. I weighed 214, ended up deadlifting 710 pounds and had a little bit left in me. And that was my eye opener about how the assistance work was very important. You obviously had to deadlift, but you couldn't deadlift too much or it would beat you up year round. So I learned about special exercises. And for me at the time, heavy back extensions, and I got a lot of pull off of heavy good mornings. So if I was beat down from squat and deadlifting a little bit, I would replace those with heavy good mornings. By heavy good mornings, I couldn't even do 315 the first time back when I was doing 600 pounds. When I got up over 700 pounds on my deadlift, you know, I was able to rep out 400 with pretty good form. I'm sure there was a little bit of a squat in there too, but I was actually able to keep my back strength, and my back had really, really developed. I brought up the hips and hamstrings like I was taught because I was weak in the sumo deadlift. That transferred over to my conventional. You know, here I am hitting 710 pounds, setting the all-time American record, which still stood until they changed the weight classes. So it's luckily it's officially retired now. But I don't know, and deadlift was a big thing. I think the reason I took to that most is the number one thing I can remember was the first time as a sophomore in high school, and I was pulling 315, and I was just learning about deadlift. Vic Voinovich at the time, again, state champion, Division I wrestler, he brought me out in the hallway before I pulled it because he saw I was a little intimidated. It was three plates on it. You know, here I was a 15-year-old kid just learning the lifts, and he read me my rights about how you approach a deadlift and how I wasn't ready for it. And he got me ready out in the hallway outside of a gym. You know, it was just me, him, and a few other kids. And I came in and smoked 315 when, you know, the last set before that, 290, 295, was a little bit of a tough one. And from that on, that mental stage and the stuff with Vincenello, Louie picking some different exercises for me, helping me out with that, working with some of the other lifters in my area, you know, that just kind of took off. And, you know, I didn't really have a coach at the time, but from there I met I made the world team, like I said, back in 2003 after that training. Had a good showing out there. Ended up being fourth in the world all around. Missed the bronze medal by 2.5 kilos. I won a little more on my deadlift, and unfortunately, the coaches didn't give me what I asked for. So kind of came back with a vengeance. Started training real heavy. Started working again some of my weaknesses, and I started learning about different programs. And this was just me, you know, I was just kind of crazy about what I was doing, you know, to the average person, I guess you could say, you know, I was a little bit psycho about the way I was training and the people I wanted to train with. When we went to the world team in 2003, a lot of my friends, you know, they just kind of lifted and hung out. I met the Russian coaches and I made them talk to me about their training. I saw the Japanese and Chinese lifters very technical on the bench press, and I saw that my technique was behind. I looked a lot stronger than some of my lifters, but I saw their technique is flawless. So I went over and I made those guys sit down and talk to me. How do you train? You know, we had as much communication as we could. I was like, here I am in the world team and my friends are going out and they're hanging out and I'm making lifters and coaches sit down with me. I said, I want to know why you're better. I want to know why I took fourth in the world instead of top three like I wanted. I want to know why your program is better. You know, Kevin, you and I ended up talking about Detmar Wolf. We got on that subject. His guy at the time from Norway had beaten me, and I was real upset because I thought I was one of the best deadlifters, you know, for my junior division. And I ended up taking, you know, a bronze medal out there. And I want to know why these other two guys were better than me. So I met Detmar Wolf the first time, who's the coach of Norway, who's now the coach of Germany. And again, I made him sit down with me in 2003 as a 21-year-old kid. And I made him tell me about, you know, how they trained their stuff, what they did, what their philosophy was. And this kind of just helped me develop mine a little bit more. I made my opponent at the time, Andreas Helmvitt from Norway, the one who beat me, I made him send me his routines. I wanted to know why these guys were a little bit better than me. And I was still young. I was still learning. So I made these guys send me some stuff. The Japanese lifters, I learned about putting boards under your back and actually how to develop your flexibility in your back. Those guys showed me some of their stuff. Again, I'm still learning, still coming through. This is still a little bit new to me. Talked to some other guys about their philosophy. At the time, the Russians and the Ukrainians were the best squatters that I could see at the meet. There's always the exception. There's a couple guys from Ecuador doing real well. So I sat there and talked with the Russian coaches. I ended up giving a Russian coach some of my knee wraps and a bench press shirt, and he sat there. I gave him to for free, and he talked to me for several hours about how they trained in Russia, their philosophy, how they kind of trained. It was almost like Shiko style before that was really kind of popular. And that was interesting because it was a little bit the opposite of my training, where they did a lot of the main lifts several times per week and build up their bodies to handle those almost like an Olympic lifter would. So there I had some training to do, and I was kind of lost. Came back, made the world team in 2005. A mistake I was making was I was trying to bench too much, too many times, end up pulling something in my chest a little bit. But it was almost a bit of a blessing because I talked to some of my other connections and coaches. And what I did was I learned how to train around an injury. So I had to train a lot of shoulders, a lot of triceps, bench as much as I could, use a lot of board presses while my chest injury was healing up 3 weeks before the meet. And I just hammered the assistance work because I really couldn't bench that much. You know, I was getting massage work done as much as I could in my chest, but it was just killing me the last part where, you know, it was kind of becoming a little bit hazardous there. So I learned to train around as much as I could, embraced the pain at the meet, and was only like just a couple kilos behind my all-time PR, and I really hadn't benched heavy in 3 weeks. And again, so I was learning, man, if you keep your systems up, if you learn to train around lifts, again, it's not ideal, but that's just the way athletes are. They always find a good way. So 2005, I ended up taking a bronze medal, getting, you know, back on the world team and placing out there like I wanted. 2006 was a good showing for me. I ended up going to collegiate nationals that year, winning best lifter at the collegiate nationals for males, and actually ended up out totaling every single person from my weight class all the way up through heavyweight. Nobody even had a better total than me, let alone a Wilkes formula. Got my deadlift back in order too. You know, had a good squad, good showing. And again, so here I am, you know, 5 years now undefeated in the United States, and I'm going on the world team. Come back, and after 2006, I entered the men's open, and Jason Beck, who should have been a world champion that year, ended up beating me pretty bad. He beat me by, you know, I think it was about 88 pounds. So here I am, you know, 4 or 5 years undefeated, you know, still humble about it, but, you know, it's different when you're on the open. To us, that's our major leagues. That's our NFL. You know, that's our NHL. That's the best you can be is the open division. That's what really everybody looks at. You know, the other stuff is great coming into there. You know, those are good JV awards, but the real deal is the open. That's what people want. So after Jason put that good line on me, I talked to Jason about my training. I figured out some loopholes I needed to do in mine. Sherman Ledford from Quest Nutrition was also helping me out, because at that time there was no raw lifting. It was all about single ply gear, and I didn't want to give up my raw lifts because I had really strong raw lifts and I wasn't using enough with the gear. But here I am, I'm going to a gear meet. So Sherman at Quest Nutrition really worked out a system where I was still able to keep my raw lifts up, but really learn the gear a lot better. And you know, we trained all the way through, and I end up getting, unfortunately, back in 2008. It's funny how the stuff works out. Again, a couple weeks out before the meet, I ended up just getting a little bit of a back injury. And here I am, you know, I'm pulling heavy. Everything's going great. And just like the way it shows up, you know, it always seems to be that last 4 or 5 weeks before a meet when stuff really starts happening to any lifter, you know, self-doubt, numbers, you know, you got to rearrange your system. And I really didn't pull heavy. I didn't get above 660. And here I am not wanting to go to nationals. And this is, again, a good thing that wrestling had taught me, was to never give up on your goals. See stuff all the way through no matter what. And I contemplated even going to nationals, but I didn't want to get second or third. And I had guys, Jason Beck moved out of the weight class. So Nick Taluki moved down, former national champion. Char Kahagan, national record holder, deadlift over 800 at 220. He came back. Tony Succarati, over a 600-pound bencher at 220, came in. So all of a sudden, here I am, second the year before, and all of a sudden I got three former national champions in my weight class right around me. And it was kind of up for anyone's grabs. And here I am suffering an injury 3 weeks out when training was going perfect. So no matter what, I learned to work around it, trained what I could. Squatting didn't bother it, so I talked about upping my squat a little bit more. You know, just had to train a lot of back stuff with chest supported rows, stuff that didn't bother me. Got massage work done, saw a physical therapist, chiropractic work, did everything I could, a lot of praying and everything. And here I come out in 2008. And, you know, it is what it is. I had a good attitude. And I said, we're just going to do our best. People kept asking about stuff, you know, obviously going against three former national champions, me taking second the year before. You know, I just wanted to be brought it on. So we had to have three good squats. I had three good squats. You know, we had to move on to bench press. I go out there, I hit a solid PR on the bench press and had a little more. So my confidence is up. And then we didn't know where my deadlift was. We were honestly, we put a low open in and we warmed up really good back there. And Sherman, myself, Josh Rohr, even James Townsend, good friend of mine, were all in the back. And we decided my opener. And if you look, it was well below 700 pounds. And from there, a lot of guys had missed weights. People only got one squat in. People only got one bench in. People only got two lifts. They took a big jump on their third. They didn't get it. So I'm sitting in pretty good, and I didn't come there to take second. I didn't come there to take third. So Sherman, Josh, and James all looked at me, and we decided, you know what, this is what we came here for. And never in my life had I skipped a second attempt on my deadlift, and deadlift was my event. My opener felt great. My warm-ups felt good. And I said, listen, if you go here, you know, I was in the upper sixes on my opener. They go, you know, that'll lock in second, but then you're going to need to take third. They go, we really want you to skip your second, and we want you to put on the most weight we can to win the national title. And, you know, they started, you know, is this a good decision? Is this, I didn't even care. I said, you know what? I said, you guys are my coaches. You guys have been around me. Sherman, I got trust in you. Josh is a good friend of mine. James is a good friend of mine. And I said, we came here to win a national title. We came here to make an open world team, because sometimes you only get one shot. I said, I've already been enough through the last 3 weeks of this stuff. I've had enough setbacks. So we went all the way up to 755, which was a PR for me. So I didn't want to know what the weight is. So we skipped my second attempt. Everybody hit their thirds. We put on what I needed. I didn't want to know the weight. We put on 755 pounds and skipped my second attempt. Like I said, we went from the upper sixes to 755. Went out there. I weighed 2 pounds less than Nick. Pulled it. Had more left in me, believe it or not. Set it down very slow. I wasn't giving that up no matter what. Pulled the 755, won the open national title at 220 pounds, made the U.S. world team again. And then from there, we went on to Canada, and my focus was a lot better. And it's amazing what you still learn. You know, attitude is everything. And for the first time in my life, I was training with Gabe Daniels. Gabe was one of the only guys ever that I actually trained with that was stronger than me year round. Probably the only times I could beat Gabe was probably maybe the last 4 or 5 weeks before a meet when I was peaking out. Other than that, he kind of beat me up all year, and he's also 280 pounds. But here I am, I was working in, as a, you know, high school strength coach. So I was in the weight room from 7 o'clock a.m. till, you know, 5 p.m. I would eat, get my training in, whatever I needed to. I really wouldn't train till 8 o'clock at night. And Gabe lived about a half hour from me. So I had a half hour drive in Indiana, go work out at his house. You know, we'd train about 2.5 hours, get done at 10:30, get home at 11, eat. You know, I was in bed before 12, back up at 7. And that's the way I trained for 4 years. So fast forward back to, you know, 2008, after winning that, we went to the Open Worlds. Something that Mr. Conjun always put inside me was, you can be the best at one thing. And there's the whole saying, oh, there's a million other people better than you. I think my goal, as far as back as I can remember, was always to make some type of Olympic team and always be the best in one event. So we're making the open worlds, you know, we're traveling over to Canada. Myself, Mike Tashier was on the team, Brian Siders, Wade Hooper, you know, a lot of great people out there. And here I am competing. Had a decent squat, missed a third attempt, which kind of stunk, really upset me on there. Bench training went real well. Sherman made a right call. We sat down as my coach and I talked to him. I said, you never know. And he said, you never know how many open world teams you're going to make, life brings you. So I said, my number one goal is to medal out there as much as I could. And obviously I thought I had a shot for a gold medal in the deadlift. So that was another thing. And then obviously placing, you know, the total all around. Sherman came up to me, great coach. We hit a solid second attempt, better than my first attempt, better than my warm-ups on my bench press. And we went for a bronze medal. He goes, hey, he goes, I think you're good for this. He goes, this will solidify a bronze medal. This is what we talked about was your goals. It's your meet. So I said, yeah, I said, put on whatever you think is good. So we went out there and put on 523. And man, I went out there and smoked that weight. You know, it was a great weight. I got up, him and I looked at it. We were good for about 540 that day, if not more. But I wanted to medal in the IPF Worlds, and silver was a little bit too far out, and the gold medal was right around 600 from a Ukrainian lifter. So we took the 523. It was an all-time PR. You know, it was a solid lift. Came out there, warmed up for deadlifts. It's funny how I warmed up, because most people won't say anything to me about it, because I'm pretty intense about deadlifting and I don't want to talk to anybody except my coaches. But here I am warming up for deadlift, and I actually warm up sumo. You know, everyone's looking at me on the team, and that's the way I am. My hips and my hamstrings needed to get warmed up, and I felt that sumo for the first couple sets out there seemed to warm those areas up. And I switch over to conventional. We go out there, open up over 700 pounds, great lift. You know, we go somewhere in the mid sevens, up to around 760, I think it was, give or take, 750. Great lift right there. And then Sherman, you know, we came here what we needed to do. So I knew what was on the line, and I knew what we talked about, and he kind of just gave me the nod. He didn't need to say anything to me, and I went and got myself ready, and we put on what for, since I've been working for since sixth grade, since I've been working for since 2001, so we're talking almost 9 years here, with powerlifting was the all-time gold medal. That was one thing I always wanted to be the best at in what I did. And we're not talking with a deadlift bar. We're not talking with, you know, crazy gear or anything like that. Drug-free, USAPL, IPF powerlifting. So we put on 782.6. I had Dave Ricks in my corner too. Dave, later on, I'll tell you a funny story when we got done. But we put the 782.6, and it was the right weight. You know, I kept the bar close, raised my chest up first. I mean, when I can get my chest going on a deadlift, my back and my hips and hamstrings are strong enough to finish. So here I am. I go out and pull the gold medal, 782.6 pounds. You know, I only weighed in at about 218 pounds. Set that down very slow. If you look at it, I almost did like a negative with the lift because I did not want to let that go. I didn't want anybody to say anything about that lift. I wasn't clean. So I ended up pulling that. Unfortunately, you know, I ended up being fourth in the all around, but came through with what I'd been wanting for since I started sports, which was a gold medal in something. I learned a lot about myself from there. I think that was my highlight. And then from there, it just kept coming. We made the highest you can get in powerlifting, which is the World Games. You know, the World Games, for those that don't know, it's held once every 4 years in the off years of the Olympics. So if they would have cut wrestling, you know, if they would have cut some of the other sports, they would have dropped down to the World Games. Those are the teams and sports trying to get into the actual Olympics. So what they did at the Worlds is they capped this in by Wilkes formula. So even though I took fourth at my weight class, I had a better Wilkes formula than some of the other lifters. You know, I had one of the top deadlifts that year, even for the 242s and 275s. So that put me up there, ended up making the World Games. We got to travel to Taiwan. And for the first time, it actually felt like you're on an Olympic team because they're taking you through customs. They have, you know, Mike Tashier and I talked a lot about this. They, you know, had interpreters for us. They had, everything was kind of taken care of on our end. We had a whole actual venue just dedicated towards powerlifting. So that was kind of the surreal thing. Like, hey, here's the highest you can get in this sport. This is the top of the line. Nothing else is, you know, better achievement, and nothing else can get higher. So I ended up going out there. You know, didn't have my best showing. I think the IPF Worlds is where I really had it at. And just my sleep, my diet was off. Those are all excuses to make, but ended up finishing seventh. They put in the 198 pounders and the 220 pounders together. So I ended up finishing seventh out of 12. Didn't have a great meet. Ended up only going, I believe, 5 for 9 out there, and still finished seventh out of all the medalists from the IPF Worlds for that. During that time too, I also got to compete with the best IPF and USAPL deadlifters. They had what's called the Arnold Classic, the deadlift challenge out there. So that's where they grouped the top anywhere between 17 and 20 some lifters in the United States. For deadlift, they grouped you in by your Wilks formula, and you had to deadlift over 700 pounds. So I went out there and competed for 2 years on the deadlift only. Just missed beating my hero, Brad Gillingham. I purposely weighed in at 216 pounds, and I put 789 on the bar on a deadlift-only competition and got it all the way up. If you look at the lift, it's over 11 seconds from the ground to right before I locked it out. Just missed it by an eyelash. I mean, all I had to do was finish and bring my hips through. But I didn't let go, and I didn't know what happened. I ended up just tearing my hand pretty bad. But looking back on that lift, I was really disappointed in myself because I didn't know what was happening. I thought I gave up, and I was just real upset. I didn't know what was going on until I actually looked down at my hand. I had to get it healed up pretty good. But that's just the price with deadlift, which I love. And it was kind of I don't say thankful thought, but at least something happened that was at least I didn't give up on the lift. You know, it was just looking down. It's like, okay, at least this happened. I can at least live with myself for a little bit here while this kind of took over. But the 789 was something I really wanted to hit. That would have taken me second out there and beaten my hero, Brad Gillingham, who ended up pulling 881. He weighed 330 pounds, I believe, at the time, or a little less. But I really wanted to kind of go out there and beat him. And, you know, during this time, I was doing a lot of the high school strength conditioning and everything. And after I came back from Taiwan, had a little bit of an injury that just kind of happened out there on my opening squat and kind of carried over. I think that was a big thing. I don't want to make a lot of excuses why I didn't have a good meet to finish up. But came through and I was done with the World Games. Started training a little bit again. And at that time, unfortunately, they had a teacher cut off that they were doing at the school I was at. And I think all around, I started really getting involved with coaching more. And just in the back of my mind, it was one of those things. It was time to move on because I was starting to focus more on the coaching and less on myself. And one thing I tell my top level athletes or any of my athletes is you got to be selfish. You know, at the time, honestly, if you weren't helping me or a benefit to my training, I really wasn't going to take a lot of time with you unless you were, you know, with my kids with strength conditioning and stuff like that. But when I was in the weight room by myself or training with others, I mean, I was selfish. You know, this stuff came up, or hey, we had this family event going on, or, you know, with this stuff, we had to go here if I had to miss training. You know, hey, I'd like to go on vacation. I just didn't do it. You know, college, I never took a spring break. You know, unfortunately, and I don't really miss those at all. I was training for something, and nationals was always after that. And unfortunately, I saw a lot of my opponents. You know, they were taking spring breaks. They were doing this. They were doing that. I just went home and trained. You know, or else I would travel and go train with Vince or train with Louis Simmons at the time. You know, whoever else I could find. Greg Page was a good one who helped me out. A couple other guys with some bench equipment and stuff I needed, Vic Voinovich. So it was a pretty easy decision always for me. You know, when people went home on fall breaks for college, I took that time to go and train, learn from some of the best lifters that were going through at that time. Same thing during Christmas break. You know, I celebrated with my family, but, you know, it was time. I still had to get a workout in. You know, as crazy as it sounds, I didn't need to work out at, you know, 4 and 5 a.m. during Christmas. But to me, it was always about getting the edge. And that was something I learned from wrestling, which carried over. And it wasn't a physical thing, but it was a mental thing. Even if I went up and just did my ab workout on Christmas Day, or even if I scheduled one of my workouts, I just knew that my opponents weren't doing that. And I knew that they, you know, they weren't that committed, and they were taking a day off and planning their other stuff around it. And I said, that was good. And so did I, but I would just go in and do that. And I think when it comes down to it, when I look at my 782 deadlift, you know, when I was weighing 220, it was a lot of the stuff when people talk about mental toughness. It was all those workouts that I never missed. It was all those little days that I would come in and work on my weaknesses that I knew I needed to work on. It was those times that, you know, instead of taking a vacation, my vacation was traveling and working with other great lifters who were willing to help out. You know, it was the time that I was, you know, taking Norwegian programs and downloading them and from Detmar Wolf and trying to figure out what the heck he was saying in there and taking a look at their training. It was a culmination of all that stuff way deep down inside. And when you talk about mental toughness, you can sit there and tell yourself, oh, I just missed that lift, or I was so close, or I just got out of position. I think deep down inside, when you're really going for it, you really know deep in the pits, like if you've actually done all the work or you haven't done all the work. And when it came to deadlifting, and just powerlifting in general, I just knew deep down inside that I had done stuff that my opponents weren't willing to do. When I'm sitting there and talking to my athletes and or talking to the athletes that beat me and these coaches that, you know, from these different countries and how they trained and why I was taking fourth in the IPF worlds and not on the award stand or why I wasn't walking home with IPF medals, I wanted to see what my opponents were doing. You know, there was no Japanese or Chinese lifter that was stronger than me in my weight class, but they were more technical than me. And here they were out benching me. So I could have sat there and strength trained all I want. This guy's technique was flawless. So I sat there and made those guys and those teams and those coaches show me how they did all that stuff. It was just funny to me when my friend's like, why are you talking to that coach? Or why don't you come out and hang with us? We're at Worlds. I said, that's great. I'll be out in a minute. Right now, I got to finish talking with these guys. You know, I was showing Russian coaches. I had my little candid camera. Open my little screen, I would sit there and make these Russian and Norwegian coaches look at my squat form because my squat was holding me back from place in the IPF world. You know, here I am squatting 733 in single ply gear, but my opponents were all squatting, you know, 770, 782, a little over 800. And that was my lagging thing. So I'd sit down there with these coaches as much as I could in English and, you know, make them show me stuff. You know, I traded those bench shirts and knee wraps and stuff to that Russian coach. So he would sit down there and talk with me. And I think that was a big thing that carried over from you know, Mr. Gary Congen, Vic, with our wrestling and introduction to powerlifting, training with Gabe Daniels and Louie and the rest of those guys and Vincenello, that I really learned about all that. And it took me over 10 years, a lot of patience. There's a lot of setbacks. There are times when I wanted to quit powerlifting. There was even a time when I left powerlifting for a little bit. I was still strength training, but I decided to try some Olympic lifting and strongman. And the big thing was my attitude. And my training ways weren't going the way I needed them to. I had to learn to adapt. You know, I went from a West Side barbell method to actually learning how to get better at the competition lifts instead of doing all the box squats and speed squats. It's kind of like what, you know, you and I worked out with Kevin is you're on a different program right now. And you and I talked about Piros Dimas, one of our favorite Olympic weightlifters. And we sat there and talked about how his program changed and how he had to learn to adapt and how it took him many years to learn to it. But when looking back, you know, one of the most accomplished Olympic weightlifters, multiple time gold medalist, talked about how he had to learn to adapt it. And in the end, it was what was best benefited for him. So when people ask me about my philosophy and my training, it's just been built up after all these years of trial and error. And, you know, now that I come through as a coach and I demanded the same thing, you know, I was in a big school and I started a program for free, didn't charge any kids anything, paid a lot of my ways to go to national meets with these guys and local meets and never charged them anything because that's the way I was brought up. But the kids kind of weeded themselves out. There just weren't a lot of people who were that dedicated and I didn't have to hold any parent meetings with these kids or put out anything on paper. It was just kind of like, here's the stuff, here's the times, you know, show up with me. And lo and behold, after 4 years of starting my powerlifting coaching career, again, bringing the same intensity, bringing the same dedication to what I was doing before as an athlete, as a wrestler, as an athlete, as a powerlifter, you know, I only ended up having three kids survive. And those three kids end up being national and world champions. We all have world champion deadlifters on the IPF scene in the sub-junior, junior division. And I was the only coach in the United States, American USA powerlifting history to have three world team members from the same gym on the United States powerlifting team and then on the U.S. world bench press team. And if you ask any one of my kids, it was just one of those factors that went without saying. You know, I took kids that have never done anything where some coaches inherit people or they work with certain people or they'll talk about, you know, I helped out so-and-so. Anybody can sit in Michael Phelps's corner and coach him to a gold medal in swimming. You know, anybody in wrestling could have done that for Dan Gable. But for me, it was I wanted to actually develop people. I wanted to show that all these years in my system, the one that I developed, all this time I had spent with all these coaches from around the world and inside the United States, I wanted to bring up lifters going over my philosophy. You know, and here we are, we're coming up on, you know, 2018 and Chloe Dublin coming up. She's going to be, you know, if everything sticks to the plan, she could be the youngest female ever in the history of USA powerlifting to win an open national, you know, raw title coming up here. I got, let's see, we've got 9 world records, IPF world records coming out. You know, all this from, you know, a group of kids who started from the ground up with me stayed with me the whole time, still stay with me when they're now entering college, still accomplishing great things, talking every single week, going through stuff. And it's just been an amazing ride from my stuff as an athlete, from that first coach who started me, you know, when it was taboo to have kids strength train, who trained me the right way, the way a kid should be trained at that age, set up the greatest base of my entire life. I didn't understand that until I got more into strength conditioning, how much of a base that man set up, and the stuff that he was doing in the 90s with me is revolutionary and went against a lot of what people said. But it was amazing how much all that athletic movement and the stuff he was having us do every single week, how not only did I fall in love with it, but it was amazing how it set up my base for strength training. And when I got serious into it, I just kept going up and up and up and hit very few plateaus until obviously I got into serious powerlifting. But that base that he gave me for those 3 years can never be replaced. And that's hard to do sometimes when you're working with some of these lifters that come up, if they're a little bit veteran or they're a little bit involved and never quite got that base training, because you're trying to mix and match that along with the actual strength training that you're doing. But that stuff that I got brought early on, I, like I said from the beginning, the first things I said was that man gave me, I thought I was the most gifted, I don't even know what to say, honestly. I get a little choked up talking about him and how he changed my life. The stuff he gave me was just amazing. The opportunity that he gave me, and he did all this stuff for free. So when I look back, is I wanted to help other people change their lives the way he changed mine. So as an athlete, before I became a coach, I wanted to be very successful in what I did. I wanted to show that I could go through this stuff no matter what I was doing. It didn't matter if I was working 10, 12 hour days in the weight room and having to train at 8, 9 o'clock at night. That's just an excuse. You know, how could I talk to my athletes now about, you know, being mentally tough and, you know, doing stuff that others aren't doing if I never did it myself? You know, there were several times I wanted to quit, you know, first being in 2008. If I had never gone to that nationals because I didn't want to take second or third, I never would have won the US Open. From there, I never would have gotten my gold medal in the IPF. I never would have made the World Games. You know, that all was developed earlier on. So when I talked to kids about that, it was a blessing that some stuff happened to me and I had to learn to train around stuff. I had to get out of my comfort zone, call other coaches, ask other people at the time, seek out my own training to train around these little things, fix these little things, get better at using the single ply gear, go visit people, go train with Sherman to help me fix that stuff up. And I just always wanted to be successful as an athlete first before I told others about it, because too many times we see that with coaches that, you know, they'll talk about it or they say this and that. But it's one thing to talk the talk, and it's another thing to walk the walk, you know, which is one thing as I've gotten to know you, I see how you're training alongside your athletes, leading the way, you know, along with your coaching, which is why I have a respect for you and why I love being on these podcasts with you. It just shows that you guys are still out there. You're still training. You're still going through it. You're trying different stuff. You're getting out of your comfort zone with your new style of training. You sought out one of the best powerlifting coaches of all time, and it wasn't enough for you to just attend a seminar. You did more stuff with him. You got in contact with him. You wanted to learn more about his system. You went and paid and got training under him to learn directly from his philosophy. You know, you stayed in email contact with him. And he, or Chico even said that, you know, he was sorry that when he was switching the stuff over that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to work with you. So even stuff like that, when I see coaches, it just reminds me of why we're still in it, the dedication that we have, and the stuff that we've done as athletes can continue to do as athletes, and to keep going forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to get the buy-in, you know, we've talked about this, like, over the phone, like, they're not going to buy into the program. They know you haven't done it.
Yep.
In the same way that they are, too. So I have one question.
Yeah.
So literally, you coached yourself the entire time through this?
Yeah, but I sought out other coaches.
Did they write programs for you, or did they just kind of give you tips and you kind of just took their tips and you kind of pieced everything together over time? Or
they wrote, you know, the Detmar Wolf helped me with some programming, and I learned about getting in shape as a power lifter, supersetting stuff, which I thought was bodybuilding, you know, stuff, not actual powerlifting. I learned the importance of selecting specialized assistance work. So I looked at his, I mean, he wrote me out stuff that I followed, but I tweaked for mine. The Westside Barbell stuff, you know, all that was on T Nation, and back in the day, they, you know, lose articles every month in Powerlifting USA, but it wasn't enough. It was like you, I went down and worked and trained with him. Wade Hooper, at the time, who's one of the best IPF squatters of all time, held many, many world records, squatted 814 pounds at 181 in single ply gear, weighted set world records since he came up through in high school, college at Louisiana Tech and all the way through. Wade shared some of his stuff with me. Dave Ricks at the time, you know, talk about legend in powerlifting, been competing since 83, and he's still winning on the IPF world scene and still winning open national titles. You know, Dave shared his training with me. He talked about his facts and his fallacies and what he learned throughout all the years. So Dave gave me his programs. The guys that beat me, Jason Beck, you know, IPF world medalist, the guy that beat me in my first open and really put a tough time with my training. He shared all his stuff with me. So I just kind of pieced all these together. I made lifters talk to me. I more or less looked at their style of training, I guess. Plugged my stuff in, learned from them. You know, Sherman Ledford obviously helped me with the single ply gear. So I would just travel down to Atlanta when I got close to meets, and we'd make sure that gear was fitting because I was going to a geared meet and I didn't want to lose my raw strength, but I was still going to a geared meet and I had to suck it up and learn that stuff better. So I guess I never really had a direct coach, but I had a lot of people continually involved with my training that were always helping me in some aspect of, you know, everything with powerlifting.
I think it speaks large volumes to the community of powerlifting, the fact that you were able to go up to these, and this is not just on a national level, on an international level, to go up to these coaches and athletes and everybody was willing to help.
Well, yeah. Kevin, yeah, honestly, they didn't have a choice. You know, so Detmar Wolf, when my squat was terrible, again, squat only 733 in single ply gear and, you know, only in the mid to upper sixes raw. That wasn't a lot to get out of that. So he didn't have a choice when I brought my little mini cam over and opened up a little side screen. And he didn't have a choice. I said, you got to sit down. And, you know, I'd sit next to him when we had our team dinners or when we're at the banquet hall. And I would make him sit there and got him involved till he was going to share stuff with me. You know, and when I went down to Louis, Louis didn't even say anything to me at Westside Barbell for the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 times until he realized that I spent my fall break down there. And I came down there to train and not to, you know, party and do other stuff with my friends. And my focus was on that he invited me to come in for some workouts and talk to me about some of his good lifters that he trained with and some of the lifters back in the day with Pacifico and Kaz and, you know, all that stuff. I know we can find an argument with that area that we don't even need to get on that topic, but it was good to hear all these lifters and how they train differently and how they kind of develop stuff. And, you know, I even talked to Ricky Dale Crane, you know, again, Ricky Dale Crane, obviously on the different side of powerlifting, but he had old school routines that he used to publish a lot. And Ricky talked to me a little bit about his and how he, you know, pulled over 700 at 165 way back in the 70s. So it was kind of cool hearing all these guys, listening to them actually tell me how they trained, not just send me a program. Why did you do this, Vince? Why did you build assistance work? What mistakes did you make of deadlifts? You know, Vince's back used to get beat up a lot with conventional deadlifts. So Vince used to train a lot of sumo in his off season, which was kind of, everyone's like, no, you got to be sport specific to your lift and, you know, train specificity. And Vince was, yeah, you do at certain times, but other times you need to spend building up those weaknesses, especially at the age I was at and where I was going up.
Yeah, I found that stuff. I mean, some of those older guys were just so far ahead of their time when it comes to this stuff. And this is before like any of the science was published and stuff. And it's amazing. I guess you just do it long enough. You kind of, well, this didn't work. This works. So we'll keep this in. We'll tweak this. This worked. And then over the course of time, you kind of get stuff that works.
Yeah. That's what I never understood. Like when people have all this stuff, why wouldn't you want to talk to the old lifters and hear about their mistakes? Hear about, you know, well, I did this and, you know, this didn't develop too well. You know, way back in the day, I taught, Ed Cohen a lot, and Ed would tell me about how he was benching too often because he was trying to bring up that weak area, and that was almost, you know, detrimental, and he ended up having a small pec tear because of that. So, again, so like when you're talking to all these lifters, I wanted to know their mistakes. I wanted to know what they learned over a 10, 20, 30-year period, some of these lifters. I mean, how much information did these guys have competing on that level? So it was as simple as I made them talk to me.
And I don't think there's ever a problem with getting too much information, right? Like, why wouldn't you, like, if we took another sport, right? If I was a quarterback, why wouldn't I go to Tom Brady and ask him how he got to be where he is if that opportunity ever came up? And I think too often, I think Zach had made this point on a podcast where we were just talking in person, that the majority of people in powerlifting haven't even been in powerlifting for 5 years. So like nobody even like really knows like they just haven't been around the sport. They're new to the sport, but like they come across as almost like they know everything at this point.
Yeah, it's funny how that's come through. Is I always ask, well, you know, what have you done personally, and who have you actually, you know, brought up and actually developed? I don't want to hear who you've worked with, because there's a picture of me working with Ray Williams at a meet. You know, there's some pictures of me helping out Blaine Sumner at a meet. I don't train those guys. I happen to help them out a little bit, but it's really about who are you actually developing your group. You know, Kevin, you've got a group out there that, again, you started from nothing, and now you got people compete on the national level. You're going to have people competing for places, and who knows what you're going to make from there. I mean, when I look at that, I go, okay, here's a guy that started with, you know, when you're in the gym with zero lifters, you're training with the best. You went out and sought out the best coaching for what you were doing. You obviously had the educational background. You had a good strength conditioning experience at Harvard when you're helping out the athletes. You get to learn about periodization, some other stuff, but most importantly, you're putting the work in, and I'm seeing it in your lifters, especially with the technical side, because there's nothing greater than you can see that. But you are right. We have a lot of these coaches who, you know, everybody DM me for coaching or do this and that, and they haven't even done anything yet themselves. They haven't even trained anybody yet, or actually brought people up through. And it's almost comical at times.
Yeah, it really is. Yep. All right, Jeremy, let's wrap this up. Let people know where they can find you on the internet, on Instagram, even though you don't post that much.
I just post enough, man. Yeah. It's Jeremy Hartman. Everything's under Hartman Performance Training. So you can look Hartman Performance Training up on Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter, everything like that. But just take a look at my background, my athlete's background. And I mean, if you do your research, you'll see on there. Obviously, I'm a very busy guy with all that stuff. So I guess I put a lot of focus on that. So training the actual people in the gym. I think a great thing when I got to intern with the Cleveland Browns back in 2000. And by the way, Kevin, when I interned, they actually had a winning season the next year.
Oh, okay. Shit. Was Bill Belichick there?
What's that? No. Bill wasn't there at the time, but Tom Ozinski was the strength coach at the time, and he had a few other good people. But I think it was that 4-week internship I did that Cleveland Browns had a winning season the next time. But it was a good thing when I was 20. Was I 22 at the time? And Tom Ozinski told me, he goes, listen, he goes, all the guys that are out there writing all the time and doing all this and making all this, and he goes, when do they have time to train their athletes? He goes, I've been in this college strength conditioning and NFL stuff. He goes, dude, I got 12, 15 hour days. He goes, I don't have time to put DVDs and all this crazy stuff together. He goes, maybe when I retire or something. But he goes, if you look at a lot of younger guys, he goes, they're the ones putting in more of the work because they just don't have the time to hold all these seminars and do all this crazy stuff. So when I was 22 at the time, it was kind of a good lesson to hear, because I was asking about, what about this style and what about this and how do you train athletes and what about powerlifting? And it was kind of nice to hear from a guy who had been from the, as a pro athlete himself, to a college strength coach assistant, to a head college strength coach, to an assistant in the NFL, to a head in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's, I've heard that in the past too. And like the unfortunate part of something like that is the ones with all that knowledge that are doing that coaching aren't the ones putting the information out there.
Yeah.
You get a diluted product.
Yep.
All right, guys, make sure you follow me on Instagram. It's KWCan. Follow our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.